thick cables suggested that the shields were well supplied with power, too. Jet might talk down its capabilities, Ula decided, but the ship could undoubtedly hold its own. There was just enough room for everyone in the cockpit. Shigar had the co-pilot seat. Lorin had clocked more flight hours, but until her hand was properly treated, she was relegated to astrometrics. Clunker had patched himself in the ship's flight control systems and shut down his photoreceptors. That left Ula and Hetchke to ride out the short hop to orbit in the passenger seats. As the brown atmosphere faded away to stars, Ula instantly felt lighter, both physically and in spirit. Jet deftly guided the ship into a stable parking orbit and put it on autopilot. Then he swiveled in his seat and folded his hands behind his head.
"Now for the 10 trillion credit question," he said. "Where to?"
Everyone looked at Shigar, who shifted awkwardly in his seat.
"Easier asked than answered, I'm afraid," he said.
"Tsar Barish thinks we're going after Stryver, so I guess that's what we have to do."
"Why don't we just run?" Ula asked.
"I can't," said Jet.
"Because of a made-up contract?"
"Because she'll hunt me down and nail me to a wall if I do. She's planted a homing beacon somewhere on this old bucket, I'm sure of it. That's what I do in her shoes."
"So we go looking for Stryver," said Lorin. "He'll head for the Hex's home, for sure."
"If we had the Navicomp," said Shigar, "we'd do the same."
"He has to crack the cipher first," said Jet. "We had a go or two at it on the way to Hutter, without any luck."
"Is there any other data we haven't been given? For instance, when you interdicted the Cinzia, could you tell from its trajectory where it originated?"
Jet shook his head.
"We tried that too.
Project the ship's route back, and you get empty space to the edge of the galaxy. And then a lot more empty space after that. Same with everything else we picked up. It all points nowhere."
"They were smart," said Lorin. "And they really wanted to stay hidden. I wonder why."
They pondered that question for a moment, in silence. Ula had no insight to offer into the psychology of Lima Zandrit. The Hexes were remarkable and strange, but that alone didn't reveal anything about the people who had made them.
Or did it?
On Panatha, Ula's great-great-grandfather had been fond of collecting ancient Palawan sayings. "What you do speaks louder than what you say," was one of them. Another was, "What you make makes you." Applying that philosophy to their present situation seemed impossible to Ula, until he remembered something Yima had told him.
"The thing that built the Hexes," he said.
"The nest. It was made of a strange alloy. What was it?"
"Lutetium and promethium," said Jet.
"So they're rare metals. There can't be many worlds where both are found, right?"
Jet poured cold water on this spark of an idea. "There isn't a single surveyed world with those metals in abundance."
"What about wild space? There are lots of unsurveyed worlds in there."
"Sure, but it's a big place, and they don't call it wild for nothing."
Ula sagged back into his seat.
"How did you convince Tsar Barish you had the slightest chance of finding this place?"
he asked Shigar.
"It seems hopeless to me."
Shigar looked embarrassed.
"I reminded her that I'm a Jedi. I told her we have our ways."
Lorin reached into one of her suit's compartments and lifted out a strip of silvery metal.
"This is how we're going to find the planet," she said triumphantly, offering it to Shigar. "This and your mysterious ways."
Shigar's eyebrows.